Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 524. Science Faction, the death of serial killers.
Like, so this is like Science Faction Dexter, meaning that it's a show that could have been and should have been so much better.
Yes. Instead, it's just that one meme, that one video meme over and over again of the black detective going, "Surprise, motherfucker."
That was the one redeeming quality about that show. And that and John Lithgow's delightful performance. Do you know that to this day, my fiance only knows John Lithgow from that role, and he was so transformative in that role that she will not watch him in anything else because he was so good as the Trinity Killer.
How do you only know John Lithgow from that? Did you miss movies and television from the 80s and 90s? How did that happen?
Apparently, Harry and the Hendersons was too racy in her household. I don't know. That's a naked ape.
And I, of course, am the naked ape of this show, your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. And that lends to, like, somewhere Jane Goodall is listening to this episode, like, "Of course I wouldn't choose. That movie's practically pornography. I cannot watch Harry and the Hendersons causes Jane Goodall to climax several times before the credits roll."
Well, yeah, that portrays the alternate version of her life. Like, her life was a human living in the jungle with apes. The reverse, the ape living in the house with humans, she's looking at it and going, "Oh my God, it could have been this easy the whole time. I could have done this and not shat outside for 2 decades. Are you kidding me?"
Oh my God, shelter, food that was warm, disease, not having to make out with a chimp.
It's like when we covered those dolphin researchers and they had one where they like flooded an apartment that the woman lived in with the dolphin. And it's like, man, how egotistical do you get where you're like, you know, I could go over to the dolphin cage, which is also like something we making the dolphin go in. It's already uncomfortable enough, but no, let's put 2.5 feet of water in this 800 square foot apartment and make him hang out with us here.
Let me just say the university was not given many leases amongst the landlords. Lords of the city after they flooded one basement.
Yeah. Can't you just see the guy? He's like, "Oh man, I had a bunch of students living in here before. They grew a bunch of pot. I got mold in here. Man, was that frustrating. Am I so glad to be leasing this apartment to a responsible party like the university? How much better condition will my house be in?" And then he comes back and there's a foot and a half of chlorinated water at the bottom of it.
Excuse me. Can we have our security deposit back?
Oh, dear. And if you want to get your security deposit on this show back, go ahead and join our Patreon. And in case you guys were wondering, this week we'll be sending out our first round of goodies. So if you wanted to get in on that first round, remember, the tier number one, the very lowest tier, does get that first round of goodies. So go ahead and jump on our Patreon right now to get that first round sent out in the first wave. You will get the KN95 respirators. You will get some stickers. You will get some fun stuff. And of course, you will get access to our weekly I Call BS episodes, which I will say, Damian, we are getting some criticism for. They are not dirty enough. So we're going to have to up the spice level of these episodes, so to speak.
We need to release it as a video because I am violating myself as hard as we can. It doesn't come through on audio. Bobby probably cuts out a lot of the white noise, and the white noise is the wrong term. The making mac and cheese noise in the background. Mm-hmm. Bobby probably filters that out, but it's there. Yeah. And I am sore. I can't walk after every recording.
And make sure if you already are one of our Patreons and you want to be on that first mail out, make sure you give me a private message on Patreon with the address that you would like me to send this to, because I am sending them out this week. So if you're not on that, I'll still get to you eventually, but you'll be on the second round of stuff. And I want to get you guys set up as quickly as possible. So if you are one of our Patreons and you haven't already sent us out, go ahead and do that. Now let's get on to the 3 Patrons that we do every single episode. First Patron, thanks so much to NJ Hewitt.
NJ Hewitt, it is I, Jane Goodall, and I'd like to thank you for supporting science. You support science in the same way that my hand supports a stuck Sasquatch stepson that I have and help free him. And sometimes he gets stuck, or perhaps I get stuck. Other times, he takes too much of an erection medication, and it was I who dosed him on accident. And it is up to me to relieve it. So thank you.
And number 2, an old Science Faction fan, a guy who sometimes calls himself Joel Kelly, but we know him as Riggins.
Right, Jesse Ventura here. It's been a while since I've been on the podcast. I've been replaced by the more extreme Alex Jones version. We kind of both covered the same conspiracy thing, I think, though. But, like, I kind of have some redeeming values. A lot like you, Joel. A lot like you. You see, whereas, yo, you have...
No, Damien, we refer to him only as Riggins. This is not... Joel Kelly is some kind of pseudonym we don't go by.
That's right. I ain't got time to mispronounce names. I get it. Oi, oi, I understand. All right, Riggins, clearly you're a degenerate in that you've been a longtime supporter of this podcast. And
he is the one who emailed me directly to say, and I am not joking about this, he emailed me to say, I expected the I Call BS to be dirtier. Damien is not pulling his weight.
Well, podcast recording sessions that last upward of 2 hours can be very draining on a podcast co-host anus. But now we're getting away from things here. Just as I helped the city of Minneapolis by installing a light rail system, I have done something good, just as you have supported the scientist with your patronage to Science Faction.
My favorite part about your Jesse Ventura impression is that there are hand motions that go along with it that the audience just cannot appreciate.
You have to understand, I would get into character on the set of Predator. I'd say no. The laser actually has to pierce my chest cavity. I'm a SEAL. I can take it.
And lastly, Alicia Rowan. You might recognize that name from last week, though I mispronounced it. I actually looked up and did it the right this time because Alicia actually bumped her subscription up to our top tier, our highest tier subscription, which is fantastic. Thank you so much, Alicia. And let me just say before we get a shout out to her, that means that now 2 of our 5 top tier subscription spots are taken. So if you do want to be on a Science Faction episode and take one of those top slots, there are only 3 of those left. Once those 3 go, then that tier literally vanishes from our Patreon for, I think, like 6 months, because we are going to dedicate specific time to those. That is a big deal to have somebody else on an episode and stuff. So if that is something you might be interested in, check out our top tier, because they appear to be going faster than I thought they would. I thought we'd get one of those a year. We're less than a month in, we already have 2. So check that out. Alicia Rowan.
One of these is just going to be somebody shouting Baba Booey Howard Stern's penis into the mic, and that's just that we're gonna have to deal with it. They paid for their admission. They paid the price.
Yes,
I guess that's the episode.
Well, Alicia's a army officer, so I'm gonna guess this is not gonna be her.
That's right. We'll call your command.
Hi, Alex Jones here to let you know that last guy was a total pussy. I too was a Navy SEAL, just like Alicia was. And you know what?
No, she's an army officer, Damien, not a Navy SEAL. Sorry, Alex. And by the way, Alex Jones, you are not a Navy SEAL. I don't believe you had any service. I think, in fact, you mocked some of the parents of Sandy Hook, some of which were veterans, some of which were actually combat veterans.
Listen, these colors don't run. And that's this Hawaiian shirt. And then I rip off my shirt. I'm terrible. These colors are actually a tattoo of the Hawaiian punch guy that I got on my back. And let me just tell you, these colors do not run. I've had several tattoo removing operations, and I can still see the red on this gentleman's shirt. Once I found out that he was a member of Antifa, I said, this tattoo has to go.
The Hawaiian punch guy is a member of Antifa?
That Hawaiian punch is actually, he's punching a proud boy, some proud patriots. And he does it in a festive shirt, which makes it Hawaiian. Alicia, sorry we got distracted. You're great. And frogs are gay.
Let's move right on to science article.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number 1, where have all the serial killers gone?
Is this like, where have all the good men gone? Like, are you like an FBI investigator? Like, guys, where have all the serial killers gone? I'm a profiler. I went to profiling school.
For those of you guys who listen enough, you might have heard tidbits of this, but I'm actually a big true crime fan. I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts, and I love true crime. And I am very interested in serial killers, especially because serial killers is kind of where true crime and psychology mix the most. And I am very interested in both of those topics. And so it is interesting to hear the story of serial killers. And if you listen enough, you realize there's a lot of talk about the 70s and 80s. And you got to remember, they also weren't doing great police work back then. So it's like you couldn't throw a serial killer without landing on another serial killer back then.
I mean, the D students of today that become cops are way better than the D students of the 1950s and 1960s who became cops.
Now they have Google.
And body cameras to turn off. Some of them times they forget.
So this is a really interesting article that's in Discover right now, and it's about the sharp decline in serial killers and what may have caused it. So serial killer is actually kind of an interesting term. By the way, if you guys are wondering, we'll get into this a little bit later. The term serial killer wasn't even coined until the 1970s. We didn't even know these motherfuckers existed. Like, you might find a guy who killed a couple people, but you didn't get what was going on or why it was going on.
It wasn't until the Tony the Tiger killer that it became, that kind of became a name. Like,
yes, he killed him and Captain Crunch in a weird sex triangle.
Yeah, in the same way, like in the Midwest, they call every soda Coke. After the first serial killer, everybody was a serial killer.
Now, they'll say, like, you have to have three or more killings spaced out so it's not a spree killing and blah, 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 blah. But in general, what we're talking about is people on the cluster B sociopathic, psychopathic spectrum who also usually have a sadistic element to them, though that's not always the case. Sometimes these killers, it's especially true of female serial killers, are doing this for some kind of value to it. They get some kind of monetary value or something like that. But oftentimes they take some kind of pleasure from the killing process itself. So we see this kind of serial killer spike. Now, it's impossible to say what was going on, you know, again, before like the 70s. We don't really know. We didn't even have a term for it. We didn't really know where they existed. So we have guys like H.H. Holmes, who we knew were serial killers around the turn of the century, who killed a lot of people and definitely fit that profile. But we don't really have good stats on it. But we see it rise and rise. It peaks in the 1980s and then starts going downhill. And again, we would expect, especially as something is a new phenomenon, we would expect this to keep going up because we would get better at locating it and detecting it. We have better methods of finding these guys. So we would expect that this would go up further and further, but it definitely took this horseshoe in the 80s and went way, way down. So as an example, we know of about 770 serial killers in the 80s and less than 100 in the last decade. And again, you got to imagine that we are finding, I don't know, twice as many as we would have in the 1980s, given DNA, given all this other stuff. So we should, even if numbers stayed exactly the same, we should have like 1,500 or something known serial killers in the last decade, but we have less than 100. That's a really, really sharp decline. Another example, in the year 1987, 189 people died by the hands of a serial killer that we know of, compared to 30 in 2015, again, in a time where we are better at finding those criminals, so we should see more of it. So very, very interesting. So let's talk possible causes. We know serial killers exist now, and we know what to look out for. There's this thing called the dark triad that we see in a lot of kids. Damien, do you know what the dark triad is?
It is bedwetting. It is starting fires. It is, isn't there hurting animals and...
Yes, that's the dark triad. That's all three of them.
Isn't there another one? Like another one that's outside of this? It's peeing the bed, head trauma... starting.
Well, no, head trauma is usually associated with it, but the dark triad itself is, yes, bedwetting,
starting fires,
arson, yeah, and harming animals and people too. It's just causing harm to those who have less power than you. But animals are a big telltale sign, so that's a big thing we now know to look out for. Almost every like school psychologist knows to look out for that. We know to look out for certain behaviors of violence towards people or animals that are indicative. We know to look out for certain family situations and types of physical and sexual abuse that can sometimes trigger these things. So we have gotten much better at noticing this. So one theory is, hey, maybe we're discovering the serial killers earlier, and because of that, we are able to stop them with psychological interventions. We're able to kind of be like, you better stop killing people. We're going to keep our eye on you, little Jimmy.
I also think there's kind of been a societal shift. You know, for a long time, you know, everybody has thought like, well, if your kid's acting bad, well, you haven't beat them enough. That's on you.
That's true.
And then you take all that post-World War II PTSD and all the serial fucking that was happening afterwards. I think that was just a formula for a ton of serial killers. A ton of dads who just came home angry, called their son Fritz while giving him a jab.
Well, there's also, by the way, a general crime trend that went down. The 80s to early, late 80s to early 90s was basically the golden age of crime. Like, that was the highest crime stats ever got, the highest murder stats ever got. And ever since then, they have plummeted. Like, Damien, we got to live through, like, literally the worst crime times in United States history. It had to do with a lot of things, from rising crime to the crack epidemics and everything else. But we haven't had a lower murder rate since, like, the 1950s now, because crime in general, murder, robbery, all violent crime has plummeted since that time. We still don't know exactly why. There's a lot of theories as to why, but maybe this whole thing of serial killers going way down just kind of follows the general trend of crime itself.
I still choose to believe abortion. Freakonomics, abortion, keep aborting them babies, ladies. It could be a serial killer, and probably is.
Another thing we talked about kind of is policing. So things like DNA testing has made it much harder to get away with crimes. And so maybe we are actually catching these serial killers much earlier. So they kill one person and we catch them and they don't have time to kill 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or Green River Killer, like 20, 50 or whatever. You know, like maybe we are just getting so much better at policing, at demographics, at profiling, at just departments communicating with each other. It used to be in like the 80s, you could kill a person and just move like 3 counties over and kill more people and keep doing that for the rest of your life and nobody caught you.
And then like somebody was like, if only we had some sort of federal investigative body. Wait a second, we could be using this for more than just blackmailing politicians? We could be using it to solve murders? Get out of there, Hoover!
And then there's things like sentencing, which has gotten way harsher for violent crimes. If you are also a fan of true crime like me, you will have this phenomenon every once in a while, which you will be listening to some true crime, and they'll be like, in 1976, he got caught for a rape and double homicide, so he did 4.5 years in prison. And you're like, what the fuck? What were they doing back then? And there was this legitimate thing where violent crime was like very slap on the hand. And sometimes it was like, he had killed 3 people by this point, so he got a sentence of almost 12 years. And you're like, why? Why do you keep letting these people out and letting them kill more people?
Hold on, wait. Was he a person of color? This is, you know, we're not revealing all the facts here.
Even then, like the guy we now believe, Samuel Little, who we now believe to be the most prolific serial killer in American history, is a black guy who was arrested for murder and rape like a dozen times. But he was just like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so they just let him go. Like, they're just like, well, you did your 4 years for that murder. Try not to do any more rapes. Oh, you got a rape. Well, now you get 16 more months. That'll learn you. And like, it was just a very weird time.
Yeah, everybody killed people in that time. Every the cop, your teacher, yeah, they all had a couple notches on their belt. And so, yeah, of course, I'm not going to judge this guy too harshly. Glass houses and throwing stones and whatnot.
Then there's the idea that we just have less easy prey around right now. We don't have hitchhiking. Like, hitchhiking used to be a big way people commuted. Like, that was just how you got to work in the morning. Like, fuck it, I don't have a car, I'm going to go hitchhike. Like, I think it was because cars were shitty, so they broke down all the time, and a lot of people didn't have them, and people would just hitchhike all the time. Now, we didn't grow up quite in the hitchhiking era, but we grew up in an era where I would still see hitchhikers. Like, I haven't seen a hitchhiker since my childhood, but I have hitchhiked before, and I have seen hitchhikers before, and maybe 10 or 15 years before my era, it was an incredibly common thing to see hitchhikers almost everywhere you went.
I think there's a few things. First off, this was that same generation where people would have the uncle who was creepy and touchy babysit. Like, people, despite... People just intentionally just turned off their critical thinking brain. Like, nobody wants to touch a child or stab a hobo. In fact, don't even have your defenses up ever. Not a second. And secondly, ever since Ty Bo really just got into the community, you never know who's going to jazzercise you into the ground if you were to. Like, you're rolling the dice every time you attack somebody after Billy Blanks changed the game with Ty Bo.
Yeah, I think they knew what the creepy uncle was up to, but they were also like, listen, it's 1986 and we got tickets to see Toto and an 8-ball of Coke and we're not going to miss out and we need somebody to babysit.
I just think everybody was molested back then. Like, it was like everybody has a creepy uncle. Just something you happen. It just makes you erectile dysfunctional when you're older. Yes, no big deal.
And to that thing of having less prey, and kind of what Damien is speaking to, there was also this idea of kids being more quote-unquote free range. Now, like, I'm not for the whole helicopter parent thing, but I'm also going to not raise my kid the way we were raised. I was just talking to my wife about this. I was walking around. My son is 3. Now, when I was 3 years old, my mom walked me around the neighborhood, knocked on everybody's door, and went, hey, do you have another 3-year-old for my kid to play with? And if the answer was yes, then she just pushed me through the door, and I played there, and then I walked home at the end of the day. And there was a kid who I played with who was the same age as me, and he lived, I don't know, not a whole long, like a couple blocks away from me, and it's a suburban neighborhood, but you still have to walk through the streets and stuff. And I would do that at 3. Like, I would just wander out my house, I'd walk up the street, I'd avoid cars as I crossed the street. I don't let my son go into the living room by himself because he might trip and hit his head on the coffee table. Like, there is a difference in terms of how we police our kids now versus then, and so there's less prey in terms of kids just running around.
Don't get me wrong, your mother, as you've said on the show, also is a relic of that same post-World War II,
yes.
I'm going to fuck up my kid because of geopolitical events. And so, I mean, like your parents, like your mother immigrated to this country from the Eastern Bloc of Europe.
Yes, was literally a refugee.
And she had to have somebody to pass on this damage to. Like,
yeah, that's right.
I can't be engaged enough in my son's life to fuck him up myself. So hopefully if I just send him down the block at 3 years old, some stranger will do that for me.
But it also wasn't that uncommon to just, like, let kids run around. And also, like, we, you know, now we have these rules where, like, I want to know where you are at all times to, like, 14-year-olds, right? Whereas, literally, and I remember this was the rule when I was, like, six. Like, the rule was, on a Saturday or a Sunday, you had to leave the house. And, yes, you had to come back when the streetlights are on, but you weren't really allowed back in the house until shortly before the streetlights were on. Like, the idea was, get the fuck out of the house. I don't know where you are. I don't care. There's no such thing as a cell phone. You know where we live, find it.
Yeah, but I mean, I also knew your parents, and I can tell looking back that they just like to bang, and they needed you out of the house. Like, listen, I have been waiting to jump your father's bones all week. Get the fuck out of the house, boy.
That must have been it.
they were old when we were young. Old.
Yeah.
How are they still kicking?
They're in their 50s. Oh, dear. And there's the idea that now, you know, again, with the whole idea of less prey running around, everybody's got a cell phone. So, like, it used to be that if you could get somebody, like, if somebody was on a rural road or something and you pulled up, it was just you and them. They had nothing else. Like, if you could force them into the car, you owned that person. That was now your property, right? And now everybody can just whip out their cell phone and make a phone call to 911 and be like, I'm getting attacked. And so that makes it much harder to have easy prey running around. The great example of this is the Delphi murders. If you guys are familiar with this, this is two young women. I think they're like 12 and 14.
Killing oracles?
They are in Delphi, Indiana, and they are out walking and hiking, and they get approached by a man who ends up murdering them. And we know a little bit about the guy because one of the girls picked up her, like, turned on her cell phone and recorded video, even though the video was, like, in her pocket. They took some pictures of him from far away while he was walking towards them. And then she recorded on her phone the guy talking to them. And then, who knows, she, like, threw her phone or whatever and it uploaded to the cloud, we think. But basically, like, we have some info on this guy because of a cell phone, even though we don't think she was even necessarily in cell phone range when it happened. So, like, we have these tools that are around for people to protect themselves. And then forget cell phones, you just have security cameras, right? Like, depending on where you live, it's pretty rare that you can leave your house and travel more than a few miles without being on somebody's Ring door camera or a business's security camera, which used to be, like, really shitty black and white things on tape, but now are actually pretty high quality HD video that gets stored digitally, that sometimes gets stuck around for, you know, a month as opposed to, like, 2 days that it used to before it got taped over. So, like, between cameras and cell phones, it's also hard to just, like, do shit and not get caught.
The cell phone angle's huge because it doesn't even matter if you have one or not. Everybody has a cell phone now. Include serial killers, it's just part of an expected way of life. And everywhere you go, that thing's tracking you. Even if you turn it off for a couple hours during the window of a murder, that's still extremely suspicious. Like,
yeah.
So if you ever see somebody with one of those brick Nokia phones, they're probably a murderer. They're probably trying to get away with something.
And we already talked about, you know, like, the science of actually understanding psychology, which means that, like we said before, not only are you doing early interventions to these kids who have these problems, but even just noticing what problems are, and that it's not normal for that weird old dude to be mumbling to himself nonstop about, like, angry things. And it's like just the psychology in general of recognizing things that are going on around you. And that we used to just kind of give people a "you're weird" pass. And I think now we've kind of been like, you're weird. I want to know more about what you do in your spare time.
I think there's also, like, teachers are more involved. Like, for example, like, if a student comes distraught into class, I don't know, ever since, let's say, the 90s, and, like, what's wrong? It's like, my mother burned my hand with a stove while whipping me with a belt while calling me a dirty gay and made me pray for...
And they'd go, ew, you're gay?
And made me pray for 15 hours. You know, like, that type of shit's flagged. You know, like essentially, that mom was cooking up a serial killer. It just takes a couple of years, and basically somebody went in, turned off the oven, and said, not today.
There's also the idea, by the way, that because of some of these things and the unavailability of these, that we've actually taken that same group, and they have changed from being serial killers to mass shooters, that the people who would kind of fulfill that being a serial killer instead become mass shooters. Now, there's actually a different demographic that does those two things, so it doesn't seem like that's a great hypothesis, unless what we say is that that demographic gets changed so drastically by their inability to serial kill that they become mass shooters.
There certainly is some overlap in the Venn diagram. Could you help me explain where there might be overlap and where there is not overlap?
Yeah, usually both on that cluster B personality disorder. Both of those groups are usually sociopaths, psychopaths. Normally, we don't have a lot of young serial killers. And obviously, as we've seen with these school shootings.
Serial killer is an old man's game.
Yeah, a high percentage of very young mass shooters. There's also...
Is that because younger serial killers just don't have the upper body strength yet to really...
It's a facial hair thing, mainly. It's too disrespectful to be killed by a guy who can't grow a decent goatee.
Guns is a child's game. Real serial killers use knives.
Damien, I thought you'd be interested in this. One of the theories as to why we might have less serial killers...
Porn?
Is the the availability of porn.
I knew it. There's just find your fetish, big guy. Find your fetish.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys who had some weird sex stuff going on, right? And like before, the only way they could get out that weird sex stuff was to like tie a chick up and like tickle her feet while they jerked off. And then they had to kill her because she saw their weird tickle jerk off stuff, right? But now, not only can you go do porn, I'd expand this to like contract sex work that you could go and find online where, you know, not only can you go watch the porn you want, but you can hire somebody to go have that experience that you want to have. And it's no longer as taboo. And because like the societal culture is more accepting of sexual fetishes and things and like different things that are not normal cisgender sex stuff, then there isn't necessarily like oh my God, I have to murder this person because my secret's out.
Yeah, essentially it's only cheap people killing now. It's like, I'm not going to pay. I thank you for farting in my face for 15 minutes. That's what we agreed upon. But
now, Damien, I put together a few of my own theories, and I want to hear your version of this. So one of them I have is one we've talked about before that is one of the postulated hypotheses for why there's less crime in general, which is the lowering of lead in the environment that specifically happened after we removed lead from gasoline and paint. And we know that lead, especially when exposed to kids who are developing at certain ages, causes damage to the brain that causes a lot more violence, lower IQ, less inhibition, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a theory that that led to the decrease in crime. I think that might also be responsible for lower serial killer rates.
Despite your mom's type of Eastern European abuse that she imported from the old world, but my type of abuse is very American, very low class.
Yes, Esposito.
Very physical. It's very in your face. Oh, but not to say that the psychological...
very much like the American football of abuse, if you will.
Exactly. You have a coach whistling in your face telling you you suck. You got concussions. You have walking it off because there is no pain. There is no doctor. Are you hurt or are you injured?
Yeah.
So I think from my perspective, there is a lot less children being hit with lead pipes. And I think that's twofold.
That would help.
That's twofold. I mean, you're getting the lead and the CTE at one time.
That's actually where the phrase came from. Get the lead out. You would have to take a kid to the hospital and pull the lead flakes out of their scalp.
Tell them how you fell in the lead pipe again. As he's smoking in the ER.
I also think, like I said before, that we have different cultural attitudes towards crime and privacy. Before, like I said, it just used to be like Joe D'Angelo, the Golden State Killer, was when they finally caught him, his neighbors were like, that guy was an asshole. He would wander around his backyard mumbling and ranting and yell at people as they went by. And that just used to be something we all put up with. Like, hey, whatever, he's an old dude, he's allowed to be a dick. And I think now we're like, hey, fuck you, what's up with you? Like, let's watch this guy. Like, we understand a little bit more that people who act in certain ways aren't necessarily entitled to the privacy that they used to have, and that maybe we should keep an eye on them. So I think that's part of it as well.
So you're saying there is an upside to the Karen who is in your business. So every once in a while, a Karen calls the police, but not on a bird-watching African-American gentleman.
That's true.
But it's on somebody who legitimately deserves to be on the FBI's most wanted list.
The serial killer known as the bird watcher.
You got lucky, lady. You got lucky. You were so racist until the backstory came out.
I also think a big thing is that it's much harder to travel anonymously. Because, like, you used to be able to just hop on an airplane, like, without showing any ID. That's why we don't know who D.B. Cooper was, because you just say what your name was, and, like, nobody checked ID or anything. You just got onto a plane. You get on a bus without doing anything. Nowadays, if you're renting a car, if you're getting on a plane, like Damien pointed out, if you have a cell phone in your pocket, like, it's so easy to trace people. One of the modern serial killers who, like, found his ways around this, who was incredibly good at it, was a guy named Israel Keyes, who would go to huge length. He would go fly into one city and then rent a car under an assumed name and travel hundreds of miles and leave like murder kits stashed in the woods so he could come back and do it again. And like, he was very, very good at it, but it took a lot of work. He spent most of his time planning these weird travels and finding a way that nobody could trace where he was and stuff like that. Whereas before, yeah, you could just hop onto a plane anywhere, go someplace, kill them. And then guess what? Even if they got your fingerprints, they didn't have like a national fingerprint database record. And so they would never find you because you killed somebody in Pennsylvania. Another one that I think is really the biggest one is that we talked before about all the different advances in technology. I think a lot of it is just that there are still serial killers. They're still killing people, but we're just catching them on the first try. And so like now, instead of a serial killer, you're just that guy who murdered somebody. And so we got you before you murdered the next four people.
I think police do a pretty good job not advertising all the things they do. Like if you would have to be that type of person who really researches or listens to a lot of true crime podcasts to really get like how a cop might. So most psychopaths, sociopaths, type B personalities think they're smarter than the cops. And they're probably right. Like in general, if we gave them an IQ test.
It's kind of like a mistake. We think of serial killers as being particularly smarter stuff. But in general, they're not. They're actually usually lower IQ people. They just get away with it because, like I said before, we weren't looking for the right things.
Oh, so all right. So my thought of the narcissistic serial killer who smarter than the cops or not. Because, I mean, a lot of times these guys have head trauma as a kid. Like, I get it. I know guys who think they're way smarter than they are, think vaccines. Bill Gates wants to vaccinate them for mind control reasons. I gotcha.
And lastly, I have one, too, that's kind of an out there-ish theory, but I think it might hold some water, which is if you look at the overlap of outlets for people with these type of mental disorders, personality disorders, if you look at the outlets for them, I think a lot of them have actually evolved into online trolls. And that doesn't mean that every online troll would be a serial killer, but I think a lot of people who would get the joy that they get from sadistically harming other people can now do it from their living room. And like, that is a thing, much like we talked about porn, that can be an outlet for these people who, like, they know they're getting under people's skin. They want to see people get hurt. They want to see them get angry and stuff. And I think to some extent, being an online troll is kind of fulfilling to some of those personality types in the same way that physically harming people could be as well.
You could be president of the United States.
That's true. Indeed. We went way over time, though our second article, very interesting. They found a non-hallucinogenic version of Ibogaine, which is a drug we've talked about a lot in terms of addiction recovery and depression treatment. It's a hallucinogen from an African root. They were able to synthesize a non-hallucinogenic version that going into testing soon that they think will also help with things like depression and addiction. Now, a couple things, we've talked about it a few times about its effectiveness in treating things like addiction. We should also point out that unlike a lot of other hallucinogenics, things like LSD, things like psilocybin, Ibogaine is A, neurotoxic, so there is that issue, and B, is actually cardiotoxic. It's actually fairly bad for your heart and has and can cause cardiac arrests and heart troubles and stuff. So it's not one of those, we'll just take it and see what happens things. It is something that can be quite dangerous. So taking out the hallucinogenic factor is more than just doing that. It's also taking out the part that literally harms your heart. And so it is a big deal for all those people who would not be able to use Ibogaine safely because it could hurt their, they have a pre-existing heart condition, or who would take it and then die from it later.
So wait, Ibogaine is neurotoxic? Is this like neurotoxic in the same way that like pot, alcohol, and bath salts are neurotoxic?
Like, for instance, MDMA is neurotoxic. If you took too much psilocybin, you would have a crazy trip, but you'd be fine. If you take too much MDMA, you can do damage, literal damage to your brain. And so like there are things that are bad for you in high enough doses. So Ibogaine is one of those. Now, the question is, do you lose some of the effectiveness if you take out the hallucinogenic properties? Because we know things like LSD can, you know, help you with addiction recovery because the hallucinogenic experience helps somebody kind of come to terms with who they are and why they're doing things. And it's a long lasting, significant effect in one's life and et cetera, et cetera. So this might not be as effective, but if it's half as effective and not as dangerous, I say that's a really good solution. Then you could do that and, you know, maybe take mushrooms another day or something.
Maybe the big reason Ibogaine and ayahuasca are such good treatments is that those are very intense hallucinogenic drugs that cause you to piss and shit yourself. You have to have somebody caring for you. Otherwise, it's just a horrible mess. And maybe you need that low point. Like, you wake up from this vision just covered in piss and shit. You're like, I need to stop doing drugs. I think that's the lesson here. Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 524, where you learned all about the death of serial killers and the non-hallucinogenic ibogaine. Thank you so much, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 525.
My theory on why they don't have any more serial killers now? Netflix. Because if I had to settle for the crap that they put on TV in the 80s, I'd be out there killing people for fun too.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.